Global South Pole, a program presented to you by Sputnik Africa. Hello and welcome to another episode of Global South Pole, your go-to podcast for in-depth discussions on the economic and geopolitical developments shaping the Global South. I am your host, Aliyu Bello, and I am thrilled to have you join me today. As countries across the Global South seek avenues for economic empowerment and investment, Zimbabwe has set its sights on membership of the New Development Bank, also known as the BRICS Bank. On this episode, we will explore the potential benefits and challenges of this move. To give us the insider perspective, we are joined by Mr. Persistence Gwanyanya. I'm going to start by asking you to please introduce yourself to our listeners.
My name is Persistence Gwanyanya. I am an economist from Zimbabwe and a member of the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Monetary Policy Committee.
As someone deeply involved in Zimbabwe's economic policy making, I'm sure you have a wealth of insights to share on this topic. So what are the potential benefits of Zimbabwe's membership in the New Development Bank in terms of interest rates and loan conditions compared to other lenders?
You want to agree with me that the global new normal is characterized by a shift of economic power and influence from the West to the East, and even the flow of capital, a look east policy. So we are trying to de-risk from our historic alliance with the West. And this also happens at a time where, as a country, we are sanctioned and we are affected by the terror, which has limited our access to international capital.
For your reference, ZIDERA, or the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act, is an act passed by the United States Congress in 2001 that imposed unilateral economic sanctions on Zimbabwe. It was a response to the land reform that was initiated in 2000 by Harare authorities led by President Robert Mugabe. This reform involved the transfer of land taken over by white colonizers to indigenous Zimbabweans. Since then, illegal US sanctions against Harare and its officials have been regularly extended and amended. The European Union and the United Kingdom have also imposed their own sanctions against Zimbabwe. As a result, Zimbabwe has been deprived, for example, of much-needed loans from the IMF, that's the International Monetary Fund. The Zimbabwean government has repeatedly called for their lifting, pointing out that it is unacceptable to interfere in the politics of a sovereign state. Minor loosening of restrictive measures announced by the United States from time to time has little impact on the overall situation.
We have been funding our growth, our infrastructure, mainly on our own, from our own domestic resources, because of this limited access to international capital. Now, the BRICS Development Bank presents a perfect opportunity to address our circumstances, our challenges that we face due to issues I have explained. And it is only reasonable and advisable for the country to lean towards joining or being part of the BRICS Development Bank, so we are able to renew our aspiration of accessing international capital. And we are able to even work with those that are more friendly to us than the West. As we try to rebuild our economy, you may have known or noticed that we are doing quite a lot of infrastructure development. We are developing the roads, the airports, dams, among other infrastructures we're doing as a country. And after a very long time, when the infrastructure development was literally very inactive, that sector was literally very inactive. So we see this as an opportunity which can assist us in especially accessing the suitable capital and most appropriate capital for infrastructure. We, yes, are building our infrastructure, but the capital that we're using is not the appropriate capital. Ideally, infrastructure and capital projects are funded through long-term capital, which is not the case here in Zimbabwe, where we're funding from short-term sources. And the funding of infrastructure has not been without consequence. We've also seen increased instability on account of infrastructure funding. And we see the joining of the BRICS Development Bank as a good move that will help us to deal with what has now become a big challenge.
So speaking about the new development bank of BRICS, it has actually been gaining popularity recently. In 2021, Bangladesh and the United Arab Emirates joined. In 2023, Egypt became a member, and now there are 8 shareholders in the new development bank. So in your opinion, what makes this institution attractive for new members?
It is definitely an attractive institution because, like I've indicated, it reflects the center of economic power. The countries that are making up the BRICS Development Bank are actually growing in terms of influence and power, economic influence and power. The economic influence, the shift of economic influence and power from the West, and even including from the US to the East, is supportive of an institution that is going to be central and very attractive to the rest of the world. If talk about those countries, you know, China, for example, is over time grown to become the second largest economy, which is firstly catching up with or working on overtaking the US. But look at all the other countries like Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia used to anchor, you know, during when President Nixon abandoned the gold standard in 1971. The story of the petrol dollar used to be anchored around the strength of Saudi Arabia. And other oil exporting countries, oil producing and exporting countries. So what I'm trying to point out is the countries that are making up the BRICS Development Bank in terms of membership are strong economically, are strong financially. And it is therefore well advised for Zimbabwe to associate with such countries and renew its aspirations of rebuilding. You cannot rebuild when you are excluded, especially from access to finance. Finance is key to unlocking the potential, growth potential of a country such as ours. a resource-based country such as ours. What Zimbabwe seeks today is to climb the value chain to transform the economy from a resource-based economy to widen the manufacturing base and manufacturing sector, industrialization-driven economy, which is what all these countries have gone through. So we have got a lot of catch-up to do, and we need friendly countries to deal with. We need friendly countries to be working with, especially as regards issues of finance. You may want to know that for a long time, 2 decades now, Zimbabwe has been unable to access international capital because firstly, Zidera, but secondly, arrears, international arrears from the international financial institutions, the World Bank, the IMF, and the European Investment Bank. Yes, we sorted out the IMF and also the other bank we are indebted to is the African Development Bank. Yes, we sorted out the IMF, but we still are indebted to the other international financial institutions, and therefore are unable to get budgetary support as well as a BOP support from these financial international financial institutions, which distinguishes us from other countries like our regional peers. So these regional peers, they've got support from the international financial institutions and all other countries in the world. Most of them, they've got that support, which they've been leveraging to grow their economy. Imagine with this limited support, the progress that we have made over the few years, what will become of us if we are now able to get some form of support from friendly institutions. And I think it is quite possible that we get this support, because we actually have got tangible, real, physical infrastructures and assets that we can use to leverage in accessing international capital. We have got roads that have been financed, though through unconventional financing sources. But it's our asset, which at any given point we can leverage on, and as well we can refinance and unlock capital for the development or for other pressing needs of the country.
You rightly pointed out Zimbabwe relies on a limited pool of international support. Can you please elaborate on one of the points you made on how the new Development Bank membership will diversify Zimbabwe's access to developmental finance?
We currently rely on the budgetary allocation, which is unconventional for every country in this world to rely on budgetary allocation for infrastructure. But outside that, we've been getting some facilities from African Bank. But these facilities were structured around the minerals and other tradables of the country, such as tobacco. And they've basically been seized for facilities, which are also inappropriate for the needs of the country today. So African Bank has been the IMF of Zimbabwe for a long time, and they've assisted us in a big way. But you also find that these international financial institutions advise against using even the African Bank facilities, because they lament these facilities are not the appropriate for the country. Recently, we also accessed a facility from African Development Bank. But these facilities, in terms of their quantum and in terms of their appropriateness, may not be the best. We need long-term capital to rebuild the country.
You have pointed out that access to capital would aid rebuilding the country, and the BRICS New Development Bank focuses on infrastructure and sustainable development projects. So, can you please elaborate on how a potential membership in the NDB will assist Zimbabwe attain its goals in these areas?
Just the same, we are a member of African Bank. You asked me about how have you been benefiting from other institutions. We have also been able to benefit by being a membership of the African Bank. So when you are a member of the BRICS Development Bank, there are benefits that flows with that membership. And obviously, one of those benefits is the access to capital. You are able to borrow on appropriate terms, and that is what we are also looking at as a country. But we envisage a situation where the BRICS Development Bank looks at our situation in its unique way, how we are made up as a Zimbabwean economy. Being a resource-based economy, there is definitely scope to think through how to leverage on resources as a country and be able to unlock value from those resources and to finance the infrastructure of the country. We need institutions that are more friendly, firstly, to Zimbabwe. The Western institutions, international financial institutions, are not in a position currently to offer that hospitality because of Zidera. So there is a clause in Zidera that limits the access to international capital by Zimbabwe. So that clause is very limiting for us as a country. It makes us very unpalatable and very unattractive. So you need someone who understands your unique circumstances and the opportunities that you carry, and be able to structure something more meaningful and more beneficial to you as a country. And this is what we expect to get from the BRICS Development Bank.
So last year, President Emmerson Mnangagwa pointed out Zimbabwe's willingness to join BRICS. So how would membership in the new development bank influence Zimbabwe's economic and political integration with BRICS member states?
I think as part of the re-engagement process, the president has already set the tone of engagement, being a friend to everyone, an enemy to no one. So Zimbabwe is quite willing to work with all the economies in the world, including those that sanctioned it. But obviously, you also want to put more effort on those that have shown a positive attitude towards yourself. And you also want to increase your working together with those countries and increase not only the access to finance, but even trade. You may want to know that even trade with the EAU, for example, has been increasing over time. And with other countries, with countries other than the Western countries, they've been increasing over time. And you also want to press ahead with Hitachi trains and development. We have got quite a lot that is needed by the affluent countries, those affluent countries, and they've got quite to benefit from us. I was recently in UAE, and I picked the opportunities there that there may be need for even food products, natural foods, to come out of Zimbabwe. There is market. There is humongous, huge market for Zimbabwean products. We as a country, Zimbabwe, we are naturally gifted. The God has favored us with the resource endowment. The Creator has favored us. And we need to be able to benefit from what was commanded to our care by the Creator. So there is scope for increased trade. There is scope for increased financial flows. There is scope for even increased aid, though I don't want to talk more about aid, but it's the reality. Even aid that we used to rely from the West is becoming evasive, is becoming scarce, because they are also battling with their issues. Their economies are not growing as fast as they used to do. They are not commanding as huge the global to the global share, a share to the global economy as they used to do. So you don't expect them to continue contributing more to even aid. So we need to position ourselves strategically and closer to those that seem to have the potential to benefit us as a country. So those that seem to have the potential for mutual benefit between and among ourselves.
So my final question to you, how do you perceive the impact of Western countries' weaponization of sanctions on Zimbabwe, particularly considering the recent attempts to amend them?
It's very unfortunate that the Western countries have continued to weaponize sanctions, especially when you disagree. It is very unfortunate that, and whilst it is a reality of life, that we cannot agree in every contour of life. They don't agree with Zimbabwe, and I think they saw it fit for them to impose the sanctions on Zimbabwe. And the sanctions have been there for a long time, and they've affected our country. It's reality. It's the undeniable fact that they've affected our country. They've added to the misery that confronts us as a country today. But we as a country have determined to forge ahead despite these influences. So we know it. And recently, the U.S. has sought to amend the sanctions on Zimbabwe. But still, we take the view that without total upliftment of the sanctions, they remain a thorn in the flesh for Zimbabwe. And they are not welcome, and the country has continued to lobby, and even our peers in Africa have also condemned these sanctions as harming the ordinary person in the country and contributing to the economic malaise that the country is facing today. So in whatever form and in whatever degree of sanctions, they are condemned in Zimbabwe, and I think in Africa, they are condemned. The sanctions are not good for the country.
In conclusion, the insights shared by Mr. Gwanyanya shed light on Zimbabwe's strategic approach amidst global change. As we navigate the challenges of the global new normal, characterized by a notable shift in economic power from the West to the East, Harare is compelled to reassess its relationships and dependencies. Mr. Gwanyanya's emphasis on Zimbabwe's Look East policy underscores the imperative to diversify and de-risk from traditional Western alliances, particularly in light of sanctions and limited access to international capital. The New Development Bank, also known as the BRICS Bank, is opening up new opportunities, showing Harare the pathway to overcome these challenges and reignite its growth trajectory. The discussion highlights the importance of long-term sustainable infrastructure funding, essential for Zimbabwe's economic revitalization, by leveraging the resources and expertise of BRICS countries. Harare aims to not only address immediate infrastructure needs, but also to chart a course towards industrialization and economic transformation. Moreover, Mr. Gwanyanya's remark underscored the significance of friendly and supportive partnership in unlocking the country's growth potential. Amidst existing sanctions and limitations imposed by Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act, ZIDERA, the BRICS Bank emerges as a promising ally, offering Zimbabwe the hospitality and understanding needed to thrive on the global stage. Ultimately, Zimbabwe remains steadfast in its determination to forge ahead despite external pressures. As the nation charts its course forward, the New Development Bank stands as a beacon of hope, offering not only financial support but also a platform for Zimbabwe to assert its place in the global economy. As we wrap up this insightful episode, I invite you to stay tuned for our special segment, The Quote of the Episode by Thomas Sankara. Thomas Sankara, revolutionary and visionary president of Burkina Faso from 1983 to 1987, was an exemplary fighter for freedom and justice. This Pan-Africanist became an implacable opponent of neocolonialism and refused to compromise. He made this speech you are about to hear in July 1987 at the Organization of African Unity Summit in Addis Ababa. 3 months later, Thomas Sankara was assassinated.
Les origines de la dette remontent aux origines du colonialisme.
Debt's origins come from colonialism's origins. Those who lend us money are those who colonized us. They are the same ones who used to manage our states and economies. These are the colonizers who indebted Africa through their brothers and cousins, who were the lenders. We had no connection with this debt, therefore we cannot pay for it. Debt is neocolonialism, in which colonizers have transformed themselves into technical assistants. We should rather say, technical assassins. They present us with financing, with financial backers, as if someone's backing could create development. We have been advised to go to these lenders. We have been offered nice financial arrangements. We have been indebted for 50, 60 years and even longer. That means we have been forced to compromise our people for over 50 years. Under its current form, controlled and dominated by imperialism, debt is a skillfully managed reconquest of Africa, intended to subjugate its growth and development through rules that are totally foreign to us. Thus, each one of us becomes the financial slave, which is to say, a true slave, of those who had been treacherous enough to put money in our countries with obligations for us to repay. We are told to repay, but it is not a moral issue. It is not about this so-called honor of repaying or not. We cannot repay the debt because we don't have any means to do so. We cannot repay the debt because we are not responsible for this debt. We cannot repay the debt because, on the contrary, others owe us what the greatest wealth can never repay, the debt of blood. It's our blood that's been spilled.
And stay tuned to Global South Pole podcast. Until next time, goodbye.